Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I'm your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. We have a great story today about a father and a daughter who once trained together for a marathon, and they've been apart since then. And so this is another before snapshot, before the couch to marathon journey. And so this is going to be a fun story, I think. And then I'm going to tell you who your least favorite training partner is, and you might be surprised at who that is. And joining me once again for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How's your week been?
It's been a good week. Yeah. I'm getting in a lot of miles recently.
Yeah.
And I've also done a good bit of track work.
Yeah.
So my body is screaming at me right now.
Yeah.
Because it's, I'm at that point where I have one more workout and then it's recovery week.
Yeah.
You know how it is. At that point, you're like, just trying to get through a day to day.
And it's amazing how your body almost knows that recovery's coming.
It does.
You get that periodization, which we're going to talk about here.
Yes.
Down here a little bit, but
yes, we are.
Yeah.
This is interesting. So last week we talked about Lane and Christian getting married, you know, kids that we've watched, that we coached, and, you know, and then this past week I sent you a text message where Catherine had a baby. And so it's just funny. It's weird because all of these people around us, they keep getting older. But we don't get any older.
I don't think I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works, but it's what it is.
Yeah. So it's pollen season in the South, right?
Yes, it is.
You can hear my voice is like two octaves lower right now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, everything's about to be.
But you feel okay.
I say it's about to be paint booth season. You know, we live in pine tree country. And when those pines, when that pollen pops, it's like clouds of yellow floating through the air.
It's true.
Man, your voice, your lungs, everything in you feels it. So
yeah.
I'm feeling it this morning.
Yeah. Well, is it too late to join the Couch to Marathon
group? No, it's not. It's not. Yeah, if you have any fitness at all, we're still in the Couch to or the 5K portion of it right now. So you can still join it. You can still join us in Gulf Shores next year for the Big Beach Marathon. I actually had dinner with a couple last night. I'll describe it in just a little while. But yeah, it's not too late to join the app. We got some new updates coming in the app. So just know if you're in the app and you think, man, this thing is a little glitchy here and there, we've got big new updates coming frequently. And we've got another one coming. By this time this airs, it will be out. So it'll have a lot different look. One cool thing is we kind of built the bones of the app. And there's what I've learned about developers is there's two kinds of developers. It's kind of like the house building business.
Yeah.
You know, there's framers and there's trim guys.
Yeah.
The framers are the ones that put the structure up. It's solid. And that's what there's framers in the app development world. And then there's the trim guys that come in and make it look nice.
Yeah.
And that's what's being done right now in the app is we've got some designers in there who are also coders and I don't even know all the right terminology.
Yeah.
But this JT's his name and JV.
Yeah.
If you're listening, man, you're doing awesome.
Amen.
But he's the one that comes in and takes the structure and makes it look good, but not only look good, but work good.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's been cool to watch the whole birth to, you know, coming to fruition of this app. It's been incredible to watch it, but it's taken a lot longer than we thought it would.
Yeah.
This is not an easy lift, but it's going to be well worth it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, our post of the week comes from Will Beverlin. We've had a post from him before, I think. He says, I was psyching myself out before this run this morning, knowing how fast I have to run to get and maintain a 162 beats per minute heart rate. And then seeing that I had to hold that for 15 minutes, I was like, there's no way. Well, I was wrong. There were moments where I wanted to walk, but I told myself, self, knock it out. Knock it off. Push through. It was, and I was able to do it. The first half of the threshold interval was downhill, so it was a bit easier. But then I had to climb back out of that subdivision I was in, and that's where it got tough. What they say is true. The hardest obstacle you'll ever face running is between your ears. Mental toughness is the key.
Man, well, all I got to say is congratulations. In my opinion, threshold work is the hardest work there is.
Yeah.
It's just, it's kind of like, you know, we've talked about the 800 before.
Yeah.
It's not really long. It's not really distance, but it's not really sprint, but you're trying to do both at the same time. I think threshold work is the same thing. It's, you know, we can all get comfortable doing like intervals and we can get comfortable doing long, slow stuff, but that threshold work, there's just no comfort in it.
No, no.
And it's the hardest thing to get through.
Yeah, because the whole idea on threshold work is to try to do it as comfortably as possible. And so your mind, you start out, and it is relatively comfortable to start.
Yeah.
And before long, though, it just gets harder and harder and harder.
Yeah, it's kind of like eating that chili that just builds on you and builds on you. Every bite, it just gets hotter and hotter and hotter. And before you know it, it's killing you. I love to hear people push through these kind of workouts because they are. They're, in my opinion, they're the hardest.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, we always say, too, the toughest 6 inches of any race are the 6 inches between your ears.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what he was trying to say here. And that he is totally, totally right. You know, to me, the trick is, for me, I go through this. I mean, I did a tempo run yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it got hard. I was doing 4 miles, and it got hard after, usually for me, it's around 2 miles or so where it seems to start to get hard. And it started getting harder. And just like you said, it got harder and harder. And the thing that saved me yesterday, of course, was I had some new shoes on. So that was...
That makes everything that, better,
that's
right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But my point is that all I would do is I do my threshold work on a track on purpose because I want to be able to check on it and know every lap. Mm-hmm. And so my goal is just get through one more lap.
Yeah.
And then when I get through with that one, just get through one more lap. And it really, you really can do that.
Sure.
Just one more lap, one more mile, one more minute, whatever that thing, that next thing is.
This seems like it's a theme through this whole podcast today.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Well, our run of the week comes from, and it comes off of Strava from Haley Sharp. Of course, this was on March 17th, St. Patty's Day. And she lives in Salem, Virginia. She said, windy Patty Day run. After a week of sickness for the whole fam and an out-of-town dance trip, I'm feeling so out of shape. A lot to catch up on in the next month.
You know, I'm glad Haley put this post out there because I was just discussing this last night with a lady. And it's the whole idea that something can happen. This particular lady, it was a family situation. And she missed a week. And she thought, it's ruined. It's over. And, you know, I did some quick looking this morning, and you get varying degrees of, you know, what is actually true here. But you can miss workouts for up to 10 days with really very little, if any, fitness loss. Mm-hmm. And even going out to like 2 weeks, it can be as little as 5%. But in our minds, you talk about the 6 inches between your ears.
Yep.
You think, I've messed up.
Yeah.
I need to start over. I need to just quit or whatever it is. And everyone's a little bit different with this idea. But if you get tripped up for a week, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Don't try to go catch up.
That's right.
Just get right back on track. We got a lot of people in the 5K challenge right now. And this is probably the most important conversation is to have with those people.
Yep.
To say, if you miss a week or you even miss 2 weeks, don't worry about it.
Yes.
Now, it is cumulative, so you can't miss 2 weeks today, work out for a week, and then go miss two more weeks. That's going to start to catch up to you. But the point is, we're so hard on our... We need to give ourselves a little grace when we miss workouts or we miss getting in that walk or getting in that run. The best thing you can do is just act like it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But we dwell on, we messed up. And so point is, don't worry about it. You did not mess up. Keep going.
Yeah. Amen. The thing I always like to say is after a week like that,
you don't really lose fitness, but you lose a little sharpness.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you that getting out to run feels almost a little awkward after not doing it for a week. And so, but that comes back really quick.
Yeah.
So.
And a lot of that is probably just stiffness, because if you miss your workouts, then chances are you're not stretching. You're not doing all the things along with it. And that's usually what you feel. It's not necessarily fitness.
That's true. Our trivia question from last week: who was the winner of the first Olympic marathon in 1896? Have you heard the name Spiridon Lewis?
I have not.
Spiridon Lewis? I guess a lot of people don't know the answer to this. This name sounds like a household name to me, and I think it's because when I was in high school, my coach was big on learning running history and stuff, mm-hmm. and so I've known this for my whole life, and mm-hmm. so it feels like it's something a lot of people know, but I don't think they do. So this comes from Wikipedia. It says, Spiridon Lewis was a Greek water carrier who won the first modern-day Olympic marathon in the 1896 Summer Olympics. Following his victory, he was celebrated as a national hero. He was born to a poor family. His father sold mineral water in Athens, which at the time lacked central water supply, and Spiridon helped him by transporting it. The Greeks were very enthusiastic about this new event when they decided they were going to have the marathon. Mm-hmm. Of course, the marathon originated in Greece. That's mm-hmm. the whole story mm-hmm. of Pheidippides was from Greece. And so it was very important to them. And Colonel Papadiamanopoulos, I don't know how you say his name.
You nailed it, Dean.
Papadiamanopoulos, I think. He served under him in the military. When Lewis was in the military, he was this guy was his commanding officer, and he talked him into trying. He saw something in him. And then so they had this race to qualify in Greece, and this somebody else won the first race in 3 hours and 18 minutes. And then Lewis participated in the second qualifying race, and he was only fifth in that second qualifying race. But when it came race day, they decided that this colonel was the guy who was going to get to start the race, which was kind of cool for him, probably pumped him up a little bit. It was 17 athletes, 13 representing Greece. The early leader of the race, which led over dusty dirt roads along with throngs of Greeks had gathered to watch, was the Frenchman who had placed third in the 1500 meters prior to the marathon. I could see that, you know, mm-hmm. in these days, mm-hmm. if we saw that, we'd be like, oh, that's that he's coming back.
Yeah.
In the town of Pakermi, Lewis is said to have made a stop at a local inn to drink a glass of wine. But Lewis's grandson has said that that's incorrect, that his grandfather's girlfriend gave him a half an orange. And shortly afterwards, he got a glass of cognac from his future father-in-law. My house.
Straight
things
for
have
the
changed.
Hard stuff, dude.
Yeah. How far ahead they were, he said, I'll catch him. So he ran, Lewis ran him down eventually. When he got into the stadium, the Crown Prince and Prince George of Greece actually ran with him on that final lap around the track. He ran it in 2 hours and 58 minutes and 50 seconds. Of course, this was less than 26.2 miles at that time. Mm-hmm. But big, big celebrations. And this is what they said about the celebrations. It says, here, the Olympionic victor was received with full honor. The king rose from his seat and congratulated him most warmly on his success. Some of the king's aides-de-camp and several members of the committee went so far as to kiss and embrace the victor, who finally was carried in triumph to the retiring room under the vaulted entrance. The scene witnessed then inside the stadium cannot be easily described. Even strangers were carried away by the general enthusiasm. So it was a big deal. And then adding to that, there were two more Greek runners came in second and third, which was pretty cool. But then they found out that this third place finisher, whose also his name was Spiridon, but his last name was Balokas, was later found to have covered part of the course by carriage. And he was disqualified. So a Hungarian guy took third. After his victory, Lewis received gifts from many countrymen, including jewelry to a lifelong free shave at a barbershop. It's unknown if whether he accepted these gifts, although he did take back home the carriage he had asked of the king. After the Olympics, Lewis ended his athletic career to become a farmer and a police officer.
Wow.
And then recently, the silver cup that was given to Spiridon Lewis, when he won, sold for $860,000 at Christie's in an auction in 2012. So I can imagine that would be a big thing to have.
Yeah, for sure.
Spiridon Lewis, first.
Now we know.
First guy. And it was the Greeks had won nothing up to that point in these Olympics. And this was one of this. I think this was on the last day, sort of like they do it today. Mm-hmm. And so the Greeks, and they were, of course, the in 1896, they were held in Athens, Greece, and they had won nothing.
Yeah.
And so they were really excited to have won this. Hmm. I can imagine.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we are back. And we still need stories. We've gotten several stories lately, but we still need your story. So this is going to be this week. We're going to share the second before story of the Couch to Marathon. And we love those. These are great. And so keep those coming.
Yeah.
This comes from Matt Fitzgerald. He wrote this article, and I thought this was interesting. He's this kind of sets the scene. He says, Debbie loves working out. She has lots of time to train, having retired early from a career in marketing, and she trains a lot. Two workouts a day in a mix of disciplines, running, swimming, cycling, strength training, yoga, 7 days a week, year round. I wouldn't say she overtrains. However, aside from the occasional minor or injury or stale patch, Debbie absorbs her training well, feels pretty good, and maintains a high level of fitness. The problem that brought Debbie to me for advice, Matt Fitzgerald is a coach, was not overtraining, but a lack of improvement, particularly at the marathon distance. Over a span of 20 years, she had run 5 marathons and recorded times between 3:24 and 3:29 in all of them. Debuting at 3:26:11, Debbie had expected to make steady progress in her subsequent marathons, perhaps even scaring the three-hour barrier eventually, but it hadn't happened. She was stuck at the same level of performance she'd started at, and she didn't understand why. And he goes on to say that Debbie has a problem with what he calls lifestyle training, mm-hmm. meaning that she maintained this high level of fitness all the time, and if you do that, it's difficult to make improvements mm-hmm. on where you are. And he ascribes that to a lack of periodization, mm-hmm. which is a word you brought up a little while ago. And periodization is how we build training programs.
Sure.
And we work on one system first, and then you go to another one, and then to another one, and it's a progressive way to train. Well, if you're all the time doing the same things, then you don't improve because you're kind of at your peak mm-hmm. for what you're doing. And so, you know, for example, we tend to start with long, slow miles. When we get to run those miles a little bit faster, and then we get to shorter, faster miles, mm-hmm. and all of that goes together to bring up your level of fitness. So,
we used to, you know, I believe periodization is critical for any athlete, of any kind of athlete, from a macro
true
perspective. And it's, you know, even on the micro, you have to have fast days and you have to have slow days in a period. Also, from a micro perspective, you must have variation in training.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about, and I just had this conversation with actually my daughter-in-law now's brother. You know, he's gotten into running and he's wanting to, gotten back into running, Peyton. And he just talks about how he's going hard all the time. He's just not seeing any improvement. I said, well, you can't go hard all the time. Yeah. And it's, I think you and I, we know this and we've known it for so long. It's like so many things. We think everybody knows it.
Yeah.
But most people think that if you go hard all the time, you're going to get so much more fast. And I guess I've compared it in the past because we used to really drill this into those triathlon kids and their parents. Parents was a lot of times the biggest obstacle, you know, was we're running slow right now. And there is a reason that we're running slow right now. You got to run slow before you can get fast. And sometimes parents would buck us on this, you know.
Yeah.
Even sending their kid to our workout with their own workout
from
times. But I liken it to a knife. You know, when you build a knife, I built some knives when I was in high school. And you start with this big, thick piece of metal, which is the base. You know, we talk about base, strength, speed, race prep. That's kind of the periodization I've always used and you've kind of prescribed too. But you got to have that thick piece of steel before you can start to vary it down into where the edge starts. And where the edge starts is the strength of the knife, right?
That's right.
That's where all the strength comes from, is right at the edge. And then you start to taper that down into the knife, and that is kind of the speed phase. You gotta have a good base to build strength on. Mm-hmm. You gotta have a lot of strength before you can start to build speed. And you have to have all those before you can sharpen that tip.
Yep.
And get your race prep, that fine tuning everything. You talk about losing your edge. You know, you're not going to lose a whole lot of fitness in 2 weeks. Just like you're not going to really dull a knife very much by cutting a lot of vegetables, but you're going to lose that edge.
Yeah.
And that edge can only be formed when you have all the other things, and you have to go through that process throughout the year to get faster and to see improvements.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people don't. It seems so logical to me and you.
Yeah.
But I think for most people, and it's why we have to say it over and over.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know how many people I've seen who maybe their goal is to break 30 minutes for a 5K. That's right. Their goal. And, you know, I ask them about what they do. And on a normal 3-mile run that they have at their house, mm-hmm. they're running it in 31 or 32 minutes, which means they're running hard all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, it's really clear what the problem is at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you always say, and it holds true, most people don't run slow enough on their slow days, and they don't run fast enough on their fast days.
That's right.
And when you stay right there in the middle, that's exactly what your times are going to do. They're going to stay right there in the middle.
That's right. Yep. Good one. Well, the story this week is a Couch to Marathon story, but as with all of our stories, this is a very unique one. So check this story out. It comes from John Scheppner. I hope I'm saying his name right. I'm not sure, but John Scheppner, it's called Life is a Marathon. I have been running a long, long time. Kansas recognized cross country as a sport in the fall of 1969. I began running as a high school sophomore, and I have been running ever since. For many years, I never thought about running a marathon. I liked 10Ks. I ran a 10K race almost every weekend through the summer or whenever I could find one close. Then one day, my daughter, Jamie, said that after having two children, she needed to get into shape. She asked if she could start running with me. As a lover of running, I was thrilled. We ran together every Saturday and on our own throughout the week. One Saturday, Jamie said she wanted to run a marathon, and that began our quest for a marathon. And before we knew it, we towed the line. We ran it together the entire way. We signed up for another one a year later. 4 weeks into our 16-week training plan, Jamie came to me and said she had good news and bad news. The bad news was she would not be running the marathon with me. The good news is I was going to be a papa again. She continued to run short runs with me and ride a bike on my long runs. The day of the marathon, she surprised me and was at mile 20. At 7 months pregnant, she ran and coached me the last 6.2 miles. To this day, that is my PR for a marathon. Fast forward to today. Jamie has moved out of state, and I went through a messy divorce. We don't connect with each other like we once did. I have run 8 marathons and 16 half marathons, but have not run a marathon since 2014. Every time I think I'm going to train for a marathon, something happens. Since 2014, I've had 2 shoulder surgeries, both because of 2 different accidents 2 years apart. I had a battle with kidney stones. I spent a year on chemo because of colon cancer. I've changed jobs. I've moved to a different city. I was in an auto accident that crushed a vertebrae in my lower back. But I have always, even through chemo, ran or walked at least 8 to 10 miles per week. God was with me through all of this. Each one of the above could have ended in death. I do not believe in coincidences. God has kept me alive for a reason, so I am very involved in my local church. I tell everyone on New Year's Day, if God came to you today and told you everything that would happen in the following year, you would probably say, I'll pass. But with God's help, we always make it through. Now, I am 70 years old and have signed up for Couch to Marathon. On the bright side, I'm in a new age group. If the average age of life is 78.6 years, that is 26.2 times 3. Using that math, I am 23.3 miles of my life marathon. I can finish strong. With God's help and upward running motivation, I have one more marathon in me.
What a cool story.
I like that, the idea. He's in mile 23.3 mm-hmm. of his life. Yeah, if I look at that, then I'm, you know where I am? I'm just around that point you hit the wall. Just around 20 miles.
Let's hope you don't hit it, Dean.
Yeah.
I did my calculation. I'm at 15.3.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's getting hard.
Yeah. That's right. And this is another before story. Right?
Yeah. I hope you're marking these because we have to follow up on these.
We've got to go back
to Big Beach.
That is right. Yep. So I think this is such a cool story that he's gone through all these setbacks trying to train mm-hmm. for a marathon again. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing this. What a great story he's writing.
Sure.
If it turns out that all of the Couch to Marathon people kind of go with him mm-hmm. And finish this thing with him. Boy, he's been through a whole lot too. You know what would be cool would be if his daughter Jamie uh-huh. and he has written to her to try to get her to kind of be involved. He said what he's going to do because he and her, they don't talk a whole lot anymore as right. he indicates in his story, but he says he's planning on, you know, giving her an update regularly to let her know how it's going.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, maybe this is something. That I would love really to cool. see her come and run with him.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be so awesome to yeah. see. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. I wonder how many times we've talked about this verse. It's probably dozens, I'd
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
The thing that I got hung up on this time, because God always brings out a different part of this verse every time I look at it. And this time it was, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. You know, in the context of this story, you know, Jesus is enduring the cross because he knows what ultimately comes from that. It's worth it. Mm-hmm. to endure the cross for the salvation of you and I. And John is kind of going through that with this. He's had a big time rough patch in his life. Mm-hmm. But if in the end, all of this stuff comes together, that finish line of this marathon could be just humongous and all of that stuff would be worth it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You pointed out the joy set before him in your notes, and I've never parked there before. I mean, it's so funny how we've done this with many verses. It's like we pick up on two words here and three words there, and That's the beauty about the Bible, is it's living. Every time we read it, it says something different. But I parked on the joy set before him. And, you know, Jesus, the only thing that got him through the cross was that he had an eternal perspective. We talk about perspective a lot. And, I mean, Jesus was doing quite possibly, I'm not going to say quite possibly, Jesus was doing the hardest thing ever done on earth. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
He didn't deserve it. He was perfect. And he died for the sins of you and I. I mean, let that really set in. If you were asked to do that, our answer would be no. But he chose to do it for our sake. You know, I don't know why this stuck out to me. Maybe because it's about to be blackberry season here. He walked through his time on earth almost as if he were walking through a briar patch, a blackberry patch. Have you ever, his head was up and he was looking where he wanted to go. Have you ever walked through a blackberry patch?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever picked blackberries? You know, it's one of those things where you're picking blackberries, and I kind of liken this to sin maybe. You're picking blackberries, and before you know it, you're in the middle of the blackberry patch. You kind of wander in there, right?
Yeah.
You can wander into sin.
Yeah.
But you have to be very intentional about getting out. And what is the only way you get out of a blackberry patch? You pick a spot that you want to go, and you go.
Just go. Yeah.
And there's ripping and tearing.
Yeah.
But think about it. If your head's down and you're constantly trying to get the things off of you, and you never get out of it.
That's true.
And I feel like that's what Jesus did. I mean, you read the scriptures, you watch his life depicted on things like The Chosen, and even with his closest disciples, he was never getting distracted.
Yeah.
He was constantly looking, and he was constantly being ripped by briars and jabs, and you're not doing this right, and you're a heretic, and he kept his vision locked on eternity. And I think about even the photos that we see of Jesus praying, and I don't know if these photos are even right, but think about all the photos you see when Jesus is praying, like on the cross when he's crying out to God, or in the Garden of Gethsemane. What's his posture? You never see Jesus bowed. You always see him looking up.
Yeah.
I mean, the picture that really stands out to me is in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Yeah.
He's looking up. His eyes are always focused. And I know why we bow our heads. It's a posture of submissiveness, and we should. But I don't know. I don't know why I thought about blackberries.
That's
when
interesting.
When I saw this,
I like the analogy.
That we've got to keep our eyes fixed on where we're going, or we're going to get tangled up and the sin and the thorns of this life, and it'll slow us down to a stop.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sometimes you got to rip the Band-Aid off rather than try to pull it off slow. And
yeah, and if you've ever charged through a blackberry patch, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep, yep.
It hurts, but it's you get out.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whole idea of the joy. Joy, true joy. True, that feeling of joy, and if you've ever been there, you understand what joy is. It's worth a pretty hefty price to gain that feeling, and that's.
But the great thing about joy, you can have tremendous joy in some extreme sadness, but you can also have a lack of joy in extreme happiness. Joy is that void that we all have inside of us that we're trying to fill as non-believers.
Yeah.
And once you accept Christ as your personal Lord and Savior, that hole is filled.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter the circumstances around you, that void is full.
Yeah, that's a good point. Romans 5:3-4. Not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope.
So this verse is one of our flagship verses. And, you know, I need to go back and look who said it, because I've said this a couple times now, but I heard it here a while back, the idea that humans were made to suffer.
Yeah.
We were made to suffer. And I think about, you know, I've been rucking. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been walking with weight on my back. I started with 10 pounds a few months ago, and then I went to 20, then to 35, and right now I'm at 45. And I got another 20-pound plate right here behind me to add to it. Oh. But you know what's great about that? Is now when I put a set of golf clubs on my back, or I put my blower, you know, I got a backpack blower that I blow my driveway with. It's like it's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that has built that endurance, that ability to do hard things. That's made doing what used to be hard things a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, Martin Luther King said to judge a man by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. I love that quote by Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
But Martin Luther King's quote could have stopped is with judge a man by the content of their character. And suffering produces the character, right?
Yep.
But what is character? What is our character? It's scars.
Mm.
Character is produced by scars. I've got all these analogies this morning.
Yeah,
Dean, but
yeah.
Think about a beautiful piece of wood. You do woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
I work with wood. Landon does woodworking. Think about the most beautiful pieces of wood you've ever seen. What is it that's making them beautiful? It's their scars. It's those knots and twists and the grain of the wood that, I mean, if you just take a general piece of pine wood where everything's straight, it's not really beautiful.
Yeah.
What makes wood beautiful is the character.
Yeah.
But what creates the characteristics of a beautiful piece of wood? It's the scars.
Yeah.
You can look at a beautiful piece of wood and you can see where that thing may have been cut before, nicked in the past. You can see years of drought.
Yeah.
When looking at the grain of wood, you can see flood. You can see where a fence used to be or where a nail used to be. And I don't know. That's why I love this verse. You know, my dad always used to say, never trust a man that doesn't have scars. And because scars is what builds character. So I don't know. Went down a little rabbit hole. But in the end, we're made to suffer. We're made to do hard things. And we're made to have scars as a result. And that's what produces our character.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it makes sense that suffering, you were just talking about those tempo runs. Doing that threshold work, and it's that continuance of suffering that produces the endurance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is such a great parallel to running.
It is, yeah.
It?
Yeah.
It really is. It's a good one. 1 Corinthians 13:7 says, love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. Mm. You know, in order to endure anything, there has to be something that you care about at the core of whatever it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus went to the cross. Why? Well, because he loved us and he wanted to save us. That was his thing, that we endure the training of, whether it's the couch to marathon or whatever training you're doing, you endure it because there's something at the end that you love, that you care about, that you want to do this thing for. And it can be very small things, but at the heart of any suffering, there has to be a love of something. And I see this story and I can feel this love he has for his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He has a love for running.
Mm-hmm.
But he has this love for his daughter at the same time. And these things, that's what makes what we do. We have to have something we care about.
It's the why that we talk about is so important.
And for so many people don't really care about anything. And that's a sad thing when that happens.
Or they don't care. They let that why slip away.
Yeah. That's,
and that's why we always say, put it on your mirror, in your bathroom,
right,
on a big piece of paper.
Yep.
So that you see it every day, because the why is what, I mean, if you're not doing something for a reason, there's nothing to hold you accountable. There's nothing to keep you engaged.
Yeah.
But a why, whatever that why is. Everybody has different whys of why they run.
Yep.
Everybody has different reasons for the reason they do anything. But the moment that goes away, the thing you're doing is going to closely follow.
And that applies to our spiritual life too, right?
Sure.
I mean, we have to have that desire to have that relationship with God in order for us to do. There's some things about being a Christian is hard.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And it has to be worth it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's an important thing to not lose sight of.
Your why has got to be big.
And it's why you have to spend time reading the Bible and praying and building that relationship. Question, why has God let me live?
You know, I put down so others can see my scars. Mm. What we were just talking about, I mentioned that I had dinner last night with a couple who were discussing with them. I'll tell you the names later, but you know who they are. They're great influencers. They're kind of a local couple that, you know, they love the Lord, and he's very talented with video and journaling and, you know, the vlogs and all that stuff. And so Holly and I had dinner with them last night and talked about the idea of them going through the Couch to Marathon and documenting their journey weekly through a video and putting it out there. But one thing that I talked about with them is I want to see some of the highs, but I want to see the lows.
Yeah.
Not only me, but everybody else going through this journey, which is hard. You know, we're such an Instagram society now. Let's take the highlights and the feel good. And that is depressing, really, when you get to thinking about it. It's so opposite what you think it would be, right?
Yeah.
If you just see all that and you compare it and contrast it with your own life, that's pretty depressing. Mm-hmm. But that's not reality. And what I want to do through this series with this couple is I want to see the lows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk about frequently, and I told her last night, I'll never forget the moment Gay Coker in that very first Run for God class running up Heartbreak Hill at Edwards Park said, "I hate you, Mitchell Hollis."
Yeah.
That visceral emotion that this is hard.
Yeah.
Other people need to see that because we've never put rose-colored glasses on and said, "Oh, this is easy." Yeah. Just like Jesus through Scripture never said, not one time, that walking with me is going to be easy. In fact, he said the contrary.
Yeah.
Pick up your cross daily and follow me. Whoever does not lay down their life for me. Those are pictures of hardships. And so I think the reason God lets all of us live is so that others can learn from us.
Yeah.
And we can encourage each other and motivate one another. But that is most often done through sharing our trials, not our victories. Victories give us that hope, but seeing others' trials gives us something that we can relate to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we see those trials. That's part of the reason for why has God, you know, his question is, why has God let me live? Well, maybe the reason for that is because he's going to be an inspiration to somebody.
Yeah.
And that's what he's here for, is to be that inspiration, whether it's his daughter or the people who are listening to this.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be. And I get worked up these days.
No, really?
I know. But, you know, like these days, we close schools down because it might snow. Or we close
schools down. Do I need to go get my soapbox?
Yeah. We close schools down because it's too cold.
Yeah.
I mean, we have done that over the past couple of years. That was never the case years ago. We just continue to get softer and softer and softer. And I feel like what we're doing is we're teaching our kids that when things get hard, when it's not comfortable, you just back off and you don't do the thing. Mm-hmm. And so we're busy all the time saying, just take the easy road. Mm-hmm. And I know nobody does it intentionally. And the idea of safety first sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
But safety is not the most important thing. Do you think Paul was a safety first guy?
Right.
I don't think Paul.
Yeah, and that's so countercultural to say that. You have to hear what Dean's saying in the context of what he means.
That's right.
Because he's dead on. Safety is not first.
It's worth it to do hard things, as we talk about all the time, for reasons that way more reasons than just crossing the finish line or accomplishing something. That's important. It's cool to accomplish things, but that accomplishment bleeds over into everything else that we do.
I mean, think about Christians in other countries right now.
Yeah.
There's countries where Christians are still being severely persecuted. You're hearing about some of them in the news right now. Think about the Coptic Christians of several years ago. Safety first is denying Jesus. Deny
That's
your
right.
God and we will let you live.
Yep.
But they're not. They're keeping, again, they're keeping that why in front of them. If that why was not in big, huge letters in front of them and symbolically posted on their mirrors of their homes, that they would heed to safety first. But the reason for their doing something is much bigger than the safety of having a comfortable life. Jesus showed that. Jesus could have called down a legion of angels at any time, but that would have meant peril for the rest of us. Jesus was not safety first. Paul was not safety first. And we're not saying be reckless.
No.
It's not like what we're saying. But you should serve the Lord your God recklessly.
That's right.
With reckless abandonment.
Yeah.
Foregoing everything else to serve the Lord your God. That is what we're called to do. And if safety comes into question, so be it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many times have we've seen so many good examples of people foregoing their safety in order to do something big? You think about all of the most extraordinary things in life are things that are, you know, we just had a rocket go up and rescue two people off the space station. Do you think that there were some unsafe things, mm-hmm. some very, that they took a lot of chances mm-hmm. in order to do some of the things that they did to get there and to get back. Mm-hmm. And they're saying it's worth it. And in a lot of cases, the things that you do, it's worth it to go outside of that bubble and that safety first mentality.
Yeah. Move out of your comfort zone is moving out of your safe space.
That's right. That's right. Why has he put me in the situation I am in? Meaning God.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all ask that question. You know, whether we're in a good or a bad situation, there are times when I look at my life and I think, God, I don't deserve what you've given me. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous how spoiled I am by God. And so it works on both ends. And then there's these people, you know, this John has been through, look at all the things he's been through since 2014 with accidents and sicknesses and cancer and all of these things he's been through. How did I get here? Yeah, we all want to know how we got here. But I think that it's when we ask that question to God, why am I here,
mm-hmm.
that we get the best answers and we understand why. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to ask him. It goes back to what we're talking about earlier about, and one thing we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. You got to take time to just sit and talk with God and find out. And ask him that question because he'll reveal it to you.
Yeah.
Right?
We don't slow down enough to ask the question, though.
Yeah, yeah. This reminds me of the you've seen the cartoon where Jesus has this big teddy bear behind his back.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's asking this little girl to give up her little teddy bear.
Right.
And he's got something better for her, but she doesn't want to give up. She's just trying to decide whether I want to give up what I've got.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we're in that position and he wants to give us something big. We need to ask him what it is.
Sure.
When we get tired, how do we find strength for one more marathon?
Focus on what's ahead.
Yeah.
Find the why and focus on it. That is so important. We just keep saying it over and over, but you have to have your why, number one, and then you got to have it prominently posted in your life.
Yeah.
We say literally on your bathroom mirror, but you've got to do something to keep it in the forefront of your mind. When you're getting out of that blackberry patch, you've got to have the barn or that tree or whatever it is you're looking at Otherwise, you're going to be tangled up and you're going to be trying to get the briars off of you when you need to walk straight through. Is it going to hurt? Yes. Is it going to tear your clothes? Yes. Is it going to rip your skin in some places? Yes. But it's worth it.
That's right.
To get to that barn and to get out of those briars.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just got to rip through it.
Yep. And that commitment to whatever it is, whether it's physical, mm-hmm. you know, what keeps me going. Sometimes my body is really, I just mentioned, my body's really tired right now. But the commitment that I have to the goals I have down the road are going to, it's going to overcome that tiredness and that worn out feeling I've got. Mm-hmm. Spiritually, it works the same way. If we've got a commitment to being who God wants us to be, that will overcome all of the things that bear down on you that make it really hard to keep yourself going.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to keep that going.
And it does get easier over time. And I want to preface this by saying it does get easier in the moment, but it's why wisdom is so valuable. You know, if the first time I ever went into a briar patch, I'm just going to stay on the briar theme. The first time I ever went into a briar patch, I was probably a young kid picking blackberries with my grandma. And I got in there and I was like, what do I do? I can't see out. I can't, you know, I'm tangled up. But I got out, and so the next time I got in the briar patch, those thorns hurt just as much. But I could think back to the last time I was in that briar patch, and I was like, oh, you know, I need to find something to focus on and charge toward it. And then the next time I do it, the briars hurt just as bad, but it's a little easier to get out. And that's why it is so important to look back sometimes.
Yeah.
Look back at what God brought you through the last time to give you the confidence to march toward what he's got for you now.
Yeah. It's a good point. And listen, for John's 70 years old. You know, a lot of people, as they get older, a lot of people want to not. God still has a plan for you. I don't care how old you are. I don't care what your position in life is. God has a plan for your life. And is it a really tough physical thing? Maybe. Maybe not. But it may be a tough mental thing instead. Whatever it is, God has a plan for all of us. And we just have to do, like you said, fix our eyes where it needs to be and go and get through the briar patch.
And the characteristics of John's life
is
beautiful.
That's right.
It's beautiful.
That's right. It can be terribly hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually too. For pennies a day, Upward Running can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join Upward Running today and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to upwardrunning.com and sign up today.
All right. So, Dean, I'm going to say probably the most controversial thing I've ever said on this podcast.
Uh-oh. This could be bad.
Kirkland coffee is the best coffee. Costco Kirkland brand coffee. You know, I just fixed myself a cup of coffee during the break. And we have the Keurig, which I know for the coffee snobs out there is like, I'm a, you know, less than, but.
Yeah.
We have the McDonald's McCafe K-Cups. We have the Starbucks K-Cups. We have all the fancy, if you can say fancy, K-Cup.
Yeah.
But the cheapest K-Cup, the Kirkland brand Costco coffee, is the best.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to put that out there.
Debbie believes that too.
Really?
Is it the Colombian one? Is that which?
The Colombian Bold?
Yeah. That's what.
Yeah, it's... It's the greatest.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I don't drink coffee.
We can move on now.
Yeah. That's good. Well, how about this story? Norway has a marathon that happens in the middle of the night.
Sounds fun.
Here's a story. It says, marathons are one of the most difficult tests of human endurance ever devised. Training your body to run 26.2 miles requires constant practice and determination. Running a marathon at midnight would seem to make a hard task even harder. But that's exactly what happens every June in the Norwegian town of Tromsø, one of the world's northernmost cities. Thankfully, Its position, some 200 miles north of the Arctic Circle, give marathoners a distinct advantage because even in the middle of the night, when the race takes place, the sun is still shining in Tromsø. From May 21st to July 21st, Tromsø experiences constant daylight, meaning that one day technically lasts around 1,600 hours. This particular race, fittingly named the Midnight Sun Marathon, draws some 6,000 participants and takes place around the summer solstice when the sun's vertical rays strike their northernmost position over the Tropic of Cancer. Tromsø and other cities and towns north of the Arctic Circle experience these long stretches of day in the summer and long stretches of night in the winter because of the Earth's axial tilt. The northern hemisphere is tilted toward the sun during the northern summer, and these northern cities catch the sun's rays even when the star is shining on the other side of the Earth. But when the Midnight Sun Marathon is certainly... But while the Midnight Sun Marathon is certainly a special event, Tromsø has no plans for some sort of high noon moon midnight marathon during the winter solstice. That's probably a good idea since daytime highs in December never reach north of freezing temperatures.
Sounds like a cool race.
Yeah.
Isn't there a midnight run on New Year's Eve somewhere outside of New York City? Don't they start a marathon? Hadn't we talked about that before?
I don't know about a marathon, but...
I thought I remember that from a past discussion.
I used to run a race. My high school coach, back when I was in high school, used to have a race that started at 10 minutes till midnight. Mm. It was 2.5 miles long, and it was an ETA race, an estimated time of arrival race, so that you had to write down what time you thought you would run before you started and run the race, and then whoever was closest to their time wins. I love those kinds of races. Yeah. I love these. The other cool thing about that race was the entry fee was an old T-shirt. So you brought in an old race T-shirt, and then whoever finished first got their first pick of T-shirts from the bunch. It was a lot of fun. Man, it's got to be weird having no nighttime. Of course, the worst side of that is not having any daytime. I can't imagine that. That would just be miserable.
Yeah.
Debbie's been listening to some podcasts that I haven't listened to yet that talks about you being a lot healthier if you spend a lot of time in daylight hours out in under the sun.
For sure.
And she says she thinks that's why I'm so healthy is because I spend so much time outside.
Yeah.
It makes sense. But in the wintertime, in this place, if it's dark all the time, you never get any sun.
I don't say they do it.
Yeah.
I was getting my hair cut yesterday, and I got out of my truck. You know, yesterday was just beautiful, and temperatures were just perfect. And I was just standing outside the barbershop. I think I was sending somebody a text, and my barber came out, and we stood out there for literally 15 minutes just because it just feels – it does something to your spirit.
Yeah, it does, for sure.
I don't see how people do it in areas where there's zero. So, like most northern parts of Alaska during the winter, never gets daylight.
Well, I like these novelty races. I still haven't done the Krispy Kreme race, but I'd like to do that. I used to do a milkshake run. That's when we would have a recovery week and we just wanted to take it easy. I would get the college girls. We would meet. We would run like 2 miles to a place to have a milkshake, and we'd run a mile back to where we were, and that would be our day. I'd buy everybody a milkshake, and that's it was fun.
You know, that's how our local big group ride here got started.
Yeah,
it's called the Milkshake Ride.
That's
everybody would go ride, and then they would all head to the Burger Den to get milkshakes.
That's probably what put the idea in my head to do
sure
that.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that's why I got on the ultra train last year, you know, running ultra marathons, is because it's always fun to do something a little bit different occasionally. So what's the most unusual race you've ever run?
I guess the Blue Ridge Relay is still the most unique. It was a 208 mile. We did it with 6 people. And it's basically 30 hours of just torture.
Yeah.
And I've said this before. It wasn't the 35 or 40 miles I ran, whatever it was. It wasn't that made it so hard. It was the not sleeping.
Yeah.
Because you got to get in a van with 5 other guys plus a driver. Well, the 5 other guys smell gnarly. And
of course,
you've got all the food. And you can only have a 15-passenger van. You can't get anything bigger. You can't have 2 vehicles. The only thing you can take on this course is a 15-passenger van. So you've got all your food. I mean, it's just disgusting by the end of it.
Yeah, you know, cause,
and then you have somebody like Kevin Roberts on your team who just sweats.
Yeah,
sweats.
Boy.
We would make him strip down outside the van and towel off before he got in the van. He sweats that much. Sorry for listening, Kevin.
Well, if I could pick anything at all to do running, I would love to do the 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 mm-hmm. continents. That would be.
You're going to need a fundraiser to do that.
It's over $50,000 to just to enter the race. And of course, for the plane tickets and all the stuff that goes with it. But man, if there's anybody out there who wants to sponsor somebody, you know,
you're up for the challenge.
I'm up for it. Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally up for it. But
what do you think would be the hardest part of that?
I don't know. They start with the one in Antarctica first, so that you kind of knock that one out. So I don't think that one would be the toughest. Normally, you would think that would be just because it's going to be so cold, and the weather is brutal sometimes. But I think the toughest one's going to be, you know, like number 4 or 5.
It's kind of like that third lap on a mile.
Yeah, yeah.
You get that last one, it's like, oh, I can get this.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And the last one's in Miami. So,
But you know, I still think about, I think Ryan Hall did it, and he talks about, I think the one in the Miami, he said was the hardest.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just a cumulative
of
not only the miles, because I think the miles are one thing.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's kind of like the Blue Ridge Relay. You know, it wasn't the miles, but it was doing an effort and then getting in and everything tightening up. And then it almost, I've always said, if you were fit enough, it would almost be easier to run 208 miles at one time.
Yeah.
Rather than, because you get in and rigor mortis, and I mean, you just start tensing up. And I would say by that 7th marathon, when you start it, you're just so, your body's in knots. Not from the miles, but from the starting and stopping.
Yeah, and because you got to travel. You don't really, you can't just kind of move around. You got to travel.
You're in a plane, which you don't recover as well in a plane.
That's right.
You know, at altitude.
Yeah, you got that jet lag that comes with that. And
But you're up for it, huh?
I'm up for it. I'm totally up for it. Yes.
Let's get to work on that.
Yeah, I don't have a spare $50,000, but. All right, well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, who is your least favorite training partner? I submit that it is someone you know very well. This one's called Our Least Favorite Training Partner. What if you were placed in a room for 15 minutes with plain white walls and nothing but a button that would shock anyone who presses it? You know the button will shock you if you push it. All you have to do is sit there for 15 minutes with your thoughts. Do you think you could do it without pushing that button? What would you do? When put to the test, 67% of men and 25% of women pushed the button, intentionally shocking themselves even though they were not asked to do so. Weird, huh? But what does it tell us? I happen to think this study has greater implications for why so many people don't like running and why so many runners struggle with motivation and pushing themselves out of their comfort zones. The fact is that our least favorite training partner is ourselves. We just don't like to be alone with ourselves. Today's world is full of distractions and things to check off the to-do list. We're always busy doing something. When we don't have anything to do, we will push a button that will inflict pain on ourselves just to keep busy. So many of us never spend any time with our thoughts and only our thoughts. Now you may be asking yourself, what's wrong with wanting to stay busy and get things done? And the answer is an emphatic, absolutely nothing. But what would happen if you never took the time to just talk with your spouse or your children or your parents? The relationship would deteriorate. We have a deteriorating relationship with ourselves these days. But here's the good news. We have the antidote. Running and walking force us to be alone, at least physically, with ourselves. And so we will often fill our ears with podcasts, music, books, or anything that will add a third person to the training group. It's you, your mind, and the Ben Shapiro Show, or even Elevation Worship. We don't want to be alone with our mind. Because our mind, well, that has a mind of its own, and we don't like that. We are our least favorite training partner. When we don't take at least part of the time to evaluate our feelings and our mind while we're alone on a run, we're pushing the button to shock ourselves. We are finding ways to entertain ourselves because we don't want to be alone, despite the fact that running and or walking provide a great meeting space for our thoughts. So why do you think we don't want to go for a run with ourselves? I think it's because the evil one has filled our minds with reservations. He is the one who tells us that we need to stay busy all the time. He is the one who tells us things about ourselves that are not true. He is the one who makes us uncomfortable to go outside our comfort zone. And he doesn't want us to be alone with our thoughts because he knows that there's a great possibility that we will hear God during those quiet times. It is when we get quiet and alone that we hear from God, and Satan does not want that. So here's what I propose. If you're one of those people who never get alone with your thoughts, on your next run or walk, turn off the inputs for 10 minutes. Spend 10 minutes just trying to hear what God has to say. If you're in the middle of something tough in your life, ask God what he wants you to know about that situation and what he wants you to do. He will answer you. Listen, I get it. I like to listen to things when I run too. But there is value in turning it off sometimes. And if you don't want to do it while you're running, maybe try it some other time. Set a timer on your phone for 10 minutes and just sit with your eyes closed listening for God. You may be surprised by not only the fact that God will speak to you, but that he will give you very specific instructions sometimes if we will only take the time to listen. Go, take a run or a walk with your least favorite training partner and have a heart-to-heart discussion. You may find that God will join in that conversation. If we could sit down and talk with God, we would make an appointment. But we should realize that we have a built-in method for hearing God talk with us in our daily exercise. Don't blow the opportunity by pressing the shock button.
That's a great story, Dean.
Yeah, that's what I'm pretty sure. I am pretty sure that if I were in that room, I'd be in that 67%. I'd push that button.
Yeah, and you know what that survey tells me?
What's that?
It tells me the reason that car insurance is less for women than it is for men.
It does, doesn't it?
Because only 25% of the women did it. 67% of the men did it.
Yeah.
Which tells you everything you need to know about how reckless we are.
For sure, for sure. But here's the thing. This is what an interesting aside on this particular study is that there was one guy who pushed the button 190 times.
I can see it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, the crazy thing is we've been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of books written recently about it. I'm thinking about the comfort crisis and Do Hard Things, which I think Do Hard Things, if I'm not mistaken, was Matt Fitzgerald, who you referenced above.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that we've lost the art of being bored. In our culture, we've all started being bored. And boredom, there's so many things that come from boredom. Boredom is, first and foremost, it's when you can connect with God. You're clearing all the inputs, just like you just said, and you can clearly hear from God. But boredom is also where innovation comes from.
That's true.
We don't wonder anymore. I just listened to a podcast recently, the Mike Rowe podcast. I like listening to his podcast. And he had a guy on, and he was talking about, what all comes as a result of being bored and wondering. We don't wonder anymore, right? You know, when you say, hey, I wonder how many screws it takes to put that light switch in. What do? Before you even get the wonder, I wonder out of your mouth, your phone's up.
Yep.
You're going to Google. Yep. And that is not actually wondering. Wondering is what happens after you say that question. Ask that question.
Yeah.
Wonder comes after that. We don't do that anymore. Before we get done asking the question, we're Googling, and now we got AI compounds it even more. And he was talking about, you said going for a run for 10 minutes. He said, just try to start with not turning anything on while you're driving your car.
Yeah.
He points to the car radio started this, all this snowball. But he said, just driving your car without the radio. And
that'd be a good
idea. This is such a, you're so, everything about what you said is so spot on. And We keep screaming it. Others are screaming it. But find time to do nothing. Connect with God in silence.
Amen. Yeah. I don't know why we don't like to be alone with ourselves, but it's certainly true. And I never really thought about it quite to the way that I wrote this. This was kind of a new revelation to me. You know, the studies we've talked about before, the studies show that for an average runner, they tend to perform better if they have distractions, mm-hmm. if they have things in their ears and, you know, something that distracts them from the pain that they're going through while they run. Whereas professional runners tend to do better if they focus on that pain. But what if the issue here is not the discomfort that they're trying to get away from? What if the issue here is they're trying to get away from themselves more than they're trying to get away from the discomfort? I never thought about that, but I think that may be true. That maybe the thing we're all running away from all the time, and maybe, you know, we talk about all the bad things and what's causing the mental health crisis and all the other things in this world. We talk about food and what the food that we eat and the social media and all that stuff. What if the real problem, the root of the problem, is we just don't find time to do nothing, like you've always said?
I think that's, I'm not going to say that's the key. That's a huge issue, and it's an incredible place to start. You know, you've heard me talk about on this podcast. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know that I have deleted, reinstalled, and deleted social media on my phone probably no less than a dozen times through the past few years. And here recently, I've had it back on my phone. Well, just this past weekend, I don't even remember what it was, but I found myself alone here at the house with nothing to do. And it was like a period. I don't even know what was going on. We had something going on later. Holly was gone. The boys were gone. And I sat down on the recliner in my living room. And I got on, I think, Instagram. And I just started looking at stuff. And I look up 5 minutes later, and an hour had gone by.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got so mad, and I deleted everything. So I'm back. But we do. What would have been the best use of that time? I had a golden opportunity where my house was silent. I could have come and sat down at my desk, opened up the Bible, and just had a great conversation with the Lord.
Yeah.
But I didn't. Instead, I was watching cat videos or whatever caught my attention on social media. So if you're keeping tab, social media is not on my phone anymore. Again.
Well, I kind of like to think about it like this. I think that God, it's like a radio station. God is broadcasting to us on a frequency only we can hear, and he's doing that all the time.
Yeah.
But the only time we hear him is if we'll tune into him. And in order to tune into him, we've got to put everything else away. And I think that's, if we never hear from God, it's our fault. we're not taking the time to hear him.
Because he never gets loud, right? His voice is described as a still, small voice. It's kind of like, you know, when you just hear, while recently I thought I had a leak in my house. And every once in a while I would hear that sounding like water running. Well, what would I do? I didn't just keep talking. I'd be like, shh, 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 be quiet, be quiet. Because something's trying to tell me something. And that's the way God is sometimes.
Yeah.
He doesn't, you know, sometimes he'll blow the pipe, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes he will get like that. But most often it's, you hear a trickle. You hear God saying something and you need to quieten everything else. But what do we do? No, we go turn the volume up on everything else because we don't want, our flesh says, I don't want to hear what God has to say to me right now.
Yeah.
But we know in our heart, it's what we need to hear.
That's true.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share helpful tips each day along with encouraging quotes.
choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, it is just a click away to get started today. Every week I share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. And this week, it's shoes. You know, I just bought a new pair of racing shoes. I showed them to you. I was so proud of them. I showed them to you before we got started here. Those Saucony Endorphin Elites. Man, oh man. I feel like running on clouds. It is unbelievable. I remember when the first time I bought, this is kind of the evolution of shoes for me, is I bought that first pair of Endorphin Pros. And I ran that state record 5K I ran in those. And I remember thinking, these are incredible. I've never felt anything like this. And then I got a pair of the Endorphin Elites, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And I thought, man, I can't believe I thought those felt so good. Look how these feel. And these, the newest pair is like the same way. It's like, I can't believe how much better they get. And that's something that we have in running. I don't know if you have. I mean, you do in some ways. Like if you get a new golf club. I mean, new golf clubs are cool. But it's really a cool thing about running is, and some people are not shoe people and they don't care, and that's fine. But for me, it's pretty exciting and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this all the time with world records, and you know, can it ever get better? Can shoes? I mean, you hold up those Endorphin Elites that you just bought. Right now, you're having to go get it. You're going to show everybody on camera. So you're holding that shoe up, and you're thinking right now, how can it ever get better than this?
I know. That's
just
exactly
like
right.
You did with the last pair.
Exactly.
And it keeps getting better, and we're going to keep getting faster. And yeah, it's crazy. Where is the ending point is the age-old question. I don't know that there is one.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know either.
I mean, I'm sure in the 1920s or 1900 when they came out with that, the great, you know, extra smooth concrete cylinder track, that how can it ever get better than this?
That's true.
We wouldn't let our dog run on that track nowadays. But at the time it was the best of the best, and it's just not going to get any better. But it does make you sit and go, you know, where are we going to be in 100 years?
You're right.
I mean, is a 130 marathon out of the question?
Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, we say right now, there's no way. But 100 years ago, a 210, people were saying, there's just no way.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Well, last week we talked about this 15-year-old Kiwi, Sam Ruth. You know, he was going after Jakob Ingebrigtsen's youngest person to ever run a sub-4-minute mile. Well, he did it.
Yeah.
He ran 3:58. And he was paced by an Olympian, Sam Tanner, who's another really good New Zealand guy. And it was great to watch because Sam ran right in front of him the whole way and pulled him along. And coming down around the last curve and into the straightaway, Sam is turning around. You remember when Lane paced me to that sub-5-minute mile? And he was like kind of turning around and just trying to encourage me the whole way. That's what Sam was doing here on this. And it was really fun to watch. So there was also a third guy who ran under 4 minutes. I mean, this is the New Zealand. New Zealand has half the population of the state of Georgia. It's about the size of Colorado land-wise. And they have had some unbelievable runners have come from there. Peter Snell was... Some people would argue he's the greatest runner ever. That's how good he was. Arthur Lydiard was his coach, who is what some people would consider the greatest coach ever to have coached running. John Walker was a huge thing back in the 70s. They've got guys today, and now you got this kid coming up. I don't know what the deal is, but New Zealand, it's like an outsized impact on running.
So we talk about all the things... We just talked about where will the advancements take us? Where, you know, what will be possible in 100 years from now? Is 130 possible? And I think it's always the things that we're not thinking about now. Yeah. That aren't even there now, that we're not even. Do you think that AI will play a role in us getting faster as humans going forward? Because it's definitely disrupting every other sector of our world right now. Is AI, is it going to, like, for instance, is it going to analyze training plans and figure out we've been doing it wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, because AI can literally take billions of data points and spit out a result in no time. Is that going to be one of the things? Is the secret to running a 130 marathon only doing long runs every 30 days? Yeah. I don't know. It sounds crazy, but so does the stuff that we're doing now seem just as crazy to people 100 years ago.
Yeah,
that's where it's kind of fun to dream about. Are we going to wake up 30 years from now and look back and say, what? Are we going to listen to these podcasts 30 years from now and think, what were we even talking about?
I don't know. That's a very interesting thought. Yeah. I like the idea, though.
Because it can take, you know, think about it. Nowadays, we have so many data points even when we run. So we got a watch that's telling us, you know, tilt, shift, hip, flex, you know, stride, rate, length. You know, how much we're twisting in the air, all these data points, and you take that and you couple it with training principles to get super custom training that may be completely different than what, I don't know, I've thought about that a few times.
It's an interesting thought because right now we have to rely on our own, we have to analyze things ourselves and come to conclusions based on what we see, but AI has the ability to take so many more points and so much more information.
Because it's going to do that with nutrition too, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's going to analyze what are the data points that have caused all these people to have heart attacks.
Yeah.
And I think it's for that reason it's going to make all these things drop down. It's just because it can see so much more at one time and analyze more proficiently than we could ever do.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is scary in the same bit because it can be used to work against us, right?
Yeah.
What we got to do is we just got to keep it from, you know, what was the Terminator, all these movies where it learns and then it destroys who built it, you know? That's getting in my conspiracy.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Is it going to take over and get us all? But I think it can be used for a lot of tremendous good, and I think training
maybe
is in there somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I found this story. Actually, somebody sent this story to me. This lady. It says, today Mildred Baker ran her first ever half marathon today at the 2025 New York City Half Marathon. At the age of 79, a New Yorker for the past 54 years, Mildred joined the New York Roadrunner Striders, a free fitness program for older adults, in 2023 and quickly grew to love the weekly running and fitness workouts. Encouraged to start running by her Striders coach, Mitch Strong, Mildred has run 14 races, and the community she's found through Striders has opened her world. And she says, wherein I did not communicate or talk to anyone, now it seems like they have pulled the good out of me, said Mildred. She plans to keep running for the rest of her life. And I had this little video of Mildred finishing this race, and it was just a precious little video. She was overcome with it, but at the same time, it was almost like a wonder to her that she had done it. And it was pretty neat, pretty neat. So we see stories like that.
And she points out it was the community.
Yep.
I mean, she points out the community. That's so what Run Club is. It's the community.
Yep. How about a trivia question for this week? We know that Sir Roger Bannister was the first man to run under 4 minutes for the mile. The world record today is 3:43. Who is the first man to run under 3:50? And we may have given a hint in this podcast.
Mm.
So if you know the answer to that, dean@upward.org, send me an email with the correct answer and you'll win $20 off in the store. So you got to be a member to win, because that's how you get access to the store. So a motivational thought of the week is from George Sheehan. He said, the obsession with running is really an obsession with the potential for more and more life.
I like that. I like George.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff we've talked about in this podcast is along that vein. And I like to think about, I like to think that runners have a little bit richer life on average than other people that are non-runners. Maybe I'm crazy, but I think that's the way it is.
And again, when we say runners, we're saying runners, walkers, ruckers, bikers, swimmers, anybody that's getting out and doing hard things on that's a consistent right. basis.
That is right. Well, listen, next week we may have a really, really cool treat and a really neat story for you next week. So you do not want to miss next week's podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited to give up my chair for this guy.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see how that goes. If things come together. And don't forget, if you're not a member of the Upward Run Club, you need to download that app and become a member today.
Absolutely.
And you need to share and subscribe and do all those things to the podcast and all the videos and things that we have out there. Check it out, because it's there's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah.
And we love sharing it with you. And we thank you. If you are a member, if you listen to this podcast weekly, we are so thankful for you. So thank you so much. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.